Hi, podcast listeners. On today's show, we will interview Ellen Weaver, Superintendent of Education candidate in the Republican Party primary runoff. And Tony and I will try to discern a line that makes sense for Christians in choosing entertainment options. What filter do we use to determine when to boycott or not? And how far is too far? Difficult, deep, important conversations today. We're glad you're here to wrestle with these issues with us. Could you email us with your thoughts? drtonyandaustin@gmail.com. drtonyandaustin@gmail.com. Thanks.
All right. Welcome back. Hour number two of Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin is upon us. We appreciate Corey being with us for the first hour. And this is Tony Beam, Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we are equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. I also serve as Director of the Office of Public Policy for the South Carolina Baptist Convention, and my co-host is Gardener Extraordinaire Austin Barker.
Hi, everybody.
So how are you holding up in the heat? Are you able to, like, pour water over your head? I was driving from Spartanburg yesterday home about 4:45, and I took a picture of the temperature gauge in my truck and sent it to Denise. I mean, it was 102 degrees outside, according to the, and I was just like, I thought about you. I thought, you know, Austin's out there doing stuff.
You said Austin's tough as nails. He's fine.
Well, I'm thinking Navy SEAL territory here. Tier one operator.
Why did you say that? I was up till 1 o'clock last night again watching episodes four and five now.
I'm telling you, man. I told you. It's addictive.
Well, I have a 7-day free trial to Paramount Streaming, and so I have to milk this thing.
Well, that's true. You got to get them in there.
I'm up every night until 1 o'clock.
We want to welcome to the program this morning Ellen Weaver. Ellen is running for the state's education superintendent. Let me get it right. Superintendent of Education for the Republican nomination for that office. And the runoff is Tuesday. Early voting is taking place as we speak. It'll be going on, it started yesterday, it'll go on today, tomorrow, and then your next opportunity to vote is going to be Thursday. Please listen to me.
Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Please listen to me. Go out and vote, okay? It's extremely important that you vote in this particular runoff election. Ellen, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Tony, glad to be here. The only thing hotter than the weather is this education race.
I'm telling you, that's a good way to put it because it really has heated up. If you've got a mailbox, you're getting mailers. If you are riding around, you're hearing about this. Hopefully there's a lot of buzz about it because hopefully that means people are going to get out and vote. What I want you to do, because in the primary, there were multiple candidates, and so a lot of issues on the table. Now we're down to two candidates. Tell our audience the difference between you and Kathy Manis.
Absolutely, Tony. Well, you know, the contrast could not be more sharp and more clear. My opponent has spent her entire career fighting for the education establishment, the lefty education status quo here in South Carolina. And frankly, it is that establishment in education that has held us back in South Carolina for so long, has kept us from innovating, has kept us from passing school choice, real school choice that could help families across the state get their kids into the education environment that matches their values and that, you know, best supports their child's education. I mean, our records are so starkly in contrast that she actually has not just national Democrats, but state Democrats who have come out in support of her campaign and are openly encouraging Democrats to cross over into the Republican runoff to vote for her.
Right.
They are scared of someone who represents a conservative worldview and just getting our education system back to common sense. Like, let's stop this woke craziness. Let's stand up for parents' rights. But, you know, they want to hold on to the power that they've had, and so they're going to do whatever it takes to try to win.
Well, and Kathy Manis has been endorsed by Molly Spearman, who is the current superintendent of education, who ran as a Republican, but who also came out at the last second last year and opposed the Save Women's Sports bill and went a long way into getting the Judiciary Committee in the House to put that bill away twice. She waited until literally in the subcommittee the last day of testimony and then weighed in so that there wasn't a lot of opportunity to push back against what she had to say. And I just think that's an important piece of information that listeners need to have. If that doesn't speak about a left-wing bent in her support of education, I don't know what does.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think you're right. I mean, the manner in which it was done just expresses the disingenuousness of what I have seen in this entire campaign process, which is my opponent understands that she can't win a Republican primary if Republican voters actually know her record.
Right.
She fought Governor McMaster when he was trying to open schools in 2020. She fought against the General Assembly when they were working to eliminate mask mandates on children. She's consistently stood against school choice, then pro Common Core. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on and on and on. And so, you know, I'm proud to stand on my record. I worked for Senator Jim DeMint and cut my teeth on conservative public policy in his office. And anyone who remembers his service in both the House and the Senate on behalf of South Carolina, I mean, he's a man of his word. Agree or disagree, you never had to wonder where Jim DeMint was on a particular issue. When he took a stand, and he stood up for what he believed in, said what he meant, and meant what he said. And that's what we need in education in South Carolina. We don't need someone who is going to be trying to disguise their record and deceive voters. We need someone who is willing to say what is actually happening in our schools and then build the team to fix it. And that's what I plan to offer as the next superintendent of education.
Now, you've been leading an organization called Palmetto Promise for a number of years. That organization was set up by Senator Jim DeMint here in South Carolina. But one of the core directives or issues or things that you've worked on is choice in education. So you've been working on this for a number of years in South Carolina.
Yeah, no, I sure have, Tony. And, you know, choice is a personal issue to me. School choice is very personal to me because I'm a product of school choice. My parents sacrificed to send me to a small Christian school. I was homeschooled for several years, and then I actually graduated from an incredible public school. And so I understand firsthand in my own education experience that students may need different things at different times in their education journey. And, you know, certainly different children need different things. I mean, even within my own family, my brother, sister, and I all followed very different education trajectories. But I'm grateful that my parents prioritized education and that they made the sacrifices that they had to make in order to get us what we needed. And that's really the pathway that I want to open up for students across this state. I mean, we've got to acknowledge the reality. The vast majority of South Carolina children will always be educated within the public education system. And so we have got to stand up for those students. We've got to stand up for those teachers. We've got to stop this crazy woke indoctrination push that is coming, you know, from Washington. Somebody has to stand in the gap for our kids in public education. And frankly, that's why I'm running for this office. But we also have to acknowledge that there are many other forms of education out there that a student could benefit from. And I believe that every student should have the right to get into the education environment that's best for them.
Right. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And the one-size-fits-all model is part of the reason that South Carolina has consistently been at the bottom of the stack when it comes to education and the results that we see in our students. When you put a one-size-fits-all model into effect, a lot of children fall outside of that model, and it keeps people from being able to advance in their education in a way that's best for them. And so what you're talking about is making sure that everything that we've learned about education and wherever that knowledge comes from needs to be applied to the problem in South Carolina to fix our education system and to make it work for everybody. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Tony. You got it.
Okay. Well, tell people how they can find out more about you, because I get that question a lot. How do I know more about Ellen Weaver? What's the best source to go to get information?
Yeah, absolutely. Visit ellenforeducation.com. It's just all spelled out, ellenforeducation.com. And we have a lot of information on that website, some key platform issues that I care very deeply about, including education choice, but, you know, standing up for parents' rights. So many of the things that we have to do to stand up for teachers to restore discipline in our classrooms so that our teachers are allowed to teach. You know, we have a lot of work to do, but on that website, you'll also see a list of the folks who have endorsed my campaign. You know, we have Congressman Ralph Norman, Congressman Jeff Duncan, Dr. Ben Carson, you know, stalwart conservatives like Senator Jim DeMint and other local leaders in the General Assembly who, in my work at Palmetto Promise Institute, I've been privileged to get to know and to build trusted relationships with. Because, you know, I know you do a lot of work here in Columbia, Tony, and you understand that everything that gets done here is based on trust. And so you have to be able to work with our General Assembly, with the governor's office, in order to move conservative policy ideas forward. And that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years of my life, and that's why I'm offering myself to your listeners and asking for their vote during this early voting period, or if they vote on Tuesday, June the 28th. But I just can't express to you enough how important it is that Republican, conservative Christian voters turn out in this election. There Yes. is an education machine that is mobilizing to shut parents out of the education process and to keep a grip on the power that they have enjoyed for so many decades in this state. We have an opportunity to change that dynamic, but people have got to get out and vote.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, to point out that you've been endorsed, I believe. I saw this by Russell Fry. Is that correct?
Exactly right. Okay. Yeah, the congressman to be in the 7th district now. What
right.
a victory he had.
He did. And
we actually, Tony, have another big announcement coming today. I'll just leave you
okay.
leave
right.
you with that teaser, but stay tuned to your inbox.
Okay, absolutely. We'll look forward to hearing that. Ellen, thanks for taking the time to be with us today. I'm reminding everybody as we move forward that, again, you can vote today, tomorrow. You can vote on Tuesday of next week. If you believe in freedom in education, if you believe in parental choice, if you believe in what's best for the student and the parent, not but what's best for the education establishment, this race is all about that, and the choices are pretty stark. You need to get out and vote. Ellen, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. By the way, I neglected to mention when we were having the conversation with Ellen Weaver that South Carolina Citizens for Life has endorsed her candidacy. So you need to know that. I mean, I think that's important. And you may say, well, what does being pro-life have to do with education? Well, it has a lot to do with a curriculum, attitude toward pro-life, the value of life when it comes to education. And by the way, I agree with David Barton, who said, if you're pro-life, then all of the issues that follow, that come under being pro-life, are going to be conservative. They're going to be to the right. You're going to have because it comes with a particular worldview. And I think it's true that Ellen has that worldview. I know her pretty well, have worked with her through Palmetto Promise and a lot of things that go on in Columbia. So I would say that is her worldview. All right. Let's see. I wanted to just kind of put a warning out here for parents because, you know, Disney got slapped down pretty hard in Florida with all this stuff about, you know, coming out and supporting or opposing a bill that would simply keep third graders, kindergarten through third graders, from being exposed to transgender ideology before they're old enough to even understand what the issues are. And, of course, it was called the Don't Say Gay Bill, and it had nothing to do. The word gay didn't appear in the bill. It's the way that the LGBTQ plus ampersand hashtag, whatever, it's the way that they frame the issues to try to amplify or turn everything into anti-gay if you simply want to exercise common sense when it comes to children being exposed to ideas that they don't have the ability yet to fully understand or comprehend. So Disney kind of went silent for a little while. Okay, I mean they sort of came out and said, well, you know, we're gonna stop talking about this because they were taking a hit, and they realized that the PR on this was not going to be good for the company. But they haven't gone away when it comes to the LGBTQ+ agenda. They're actually still pushing it, and pushing it pretty hard. They've got a new movie, an animated film, that's coming out. I think it's going to be this fall because it was just debuted at the 2022 International Film Festival in Southeast France. The name of the movie is Strange World, which is a pretty good title, because it will include the first openly gay teen romance in a children's movie from Disney. So it's going to be it's the openly gay. Now it's not the point of the movie. It's not the plot of the movie, but it's in there. The scene describes the son being shy in front of his boy crush, and his dad comes in and says, "So nice to meet you. My son talks about you all the time," and further embarrasses his son. Very cute. In other words, it's a direct reference to two teenage boys who are with each other. They're in a relationship. The apparent romance between the two boys was supported by a report in the New York Daily News, which described one of the three sequences from the film that was shown at the festival. The teen romance will be part of the story, but not the main part. The teaser trailer and poster dropped earlier this month, and the movie is due to hit American theaters later this year. It features the voices of Dennis Quaid, Jake, and I can't pronounce the last name.
Is it Jake Gyllenhaal?
Is that Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I have no idea who Jake Gyllenhaal is. I mean, he's never been in a SEAL team movie or a Law and Order episode.
He's
so or Blue Bloods. Okay, so I can't. Or in a Star Wars movie. Was he in a Star Wars movie?
I don't know. I quit going to those.
Then what's the third one? What is he? You know, what's he doing here as a star? That's all I'm saying. The others are Lucy Liu, Gabrielle Union. Don't know who that is either. Do y'all know who Gabrielle Union is?
Ish. I mean, I know the name.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. Okay. She's the thing then. A description in IMDb about the movie reads, "The legendary Clades are a family of explorers whose differences threaten to topple their latest and most crucial mission." Let me tell you what's going on here with Disney and why it's worse than coming out with just a full-bore same-sex relationship movie. Because if you do that, then parents are definitely going to push back. If you just put in references and subtle hints of teenage romance between same-sex couples, then some people are going to just gloss over that and let it go. Now, that didn't happen with Buzz Lightyear. Apparently, there was enough. The release of Lightyear from Disney Pixar included a same-sex kiss between two female animated characters, and that movie took in $51 million as opposed to an opening weekend of the last Toy Story movie that took in over $120 million. And so it's evident that there are a lot of possible reasons that Lightyear was not very robust at the box office at its opening, but one of those reasons could be the fact that they've included, and it was well known, that they were going to have this lesbian kiss included in the movie. So you need to know, when the next Disney movie comes out, this is their next animated film, it's going to be hyped, it's going to be pushed, there's going to be an allusion to a same-sex teenage romance in this movie. You as a parent need to know that and make your decision about whether you're going to take your kids to see it accordingly. I mean, Disney is, I don't like it, I hate it, that Disney has decided that they're all in about this. And it's one thing, I'll say this, and I'll be criticized for this, but if Disney wants to have same-sex employees work at Disney, and they're going to be a friendly environment for all of that, then that's their corporate decision, and if that's what they want to do, okay, I may not agree with it fully, but that's not going to cause me to turn away from Disney. But what is going to make me turn away from Disney is when they begin to use their films, use their characters, use their popularity to present and promote a particular worldview about sexuality that encourages people to adopt it. And that's what they're doing. It's what they're doing in Lightyear. It's what they're doing here in this movie. And if that's what they're going to do, if it's going to cross over from just we're LGBTQ friendly to we're LGBTQ promoters, then I think that is a line where people should make a serious decision about how much of Disney they're going to support. I mean, in terms of certainly not going to this movie. I mean, look, Disney puts out a lot of good stuff. They own the Star Wars franchise now, and I don't like that because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I think some of the Star Wars stuff that gets put out is some of the best stuff, best stories, best storylines that are out there. So far, there hasn't been any of the same sex agenda inserted into the Star Wars franchise. And you know why? Because they know that that's the golden goose. I mean, Star Wars is a golden goose for them, and they may get by with some type of same-sex depiction in some of their animated features, but if they decide to turn Star Wars into something that's woke, they're going to be cutting off their own financial sources. So I think that's why you haven't seen that yet, why Star Wars has been protected to this point. Will it be going forward? Well, it depends on this. Disney is committed to changing your mind about sexuality. And what's even worse, they're committed to changing your children's minds about what's right and true about sexuality. You need to know that as a parent, and you need to push back against it, and you need to not support movies from Disney that are doing this particular thing.
But can we support Disney? I have a Disney Plus streaming, and yeah. I've had it for 2 months. I went and got it for one. There was one movie I wanted my kids to watch.
Right.
I think it was Encanto. So we just recently watched Encanto, and it was really nice. It was good. It was wholesome. It was good. There's just nothing objectionable about Encanto. And but
I have Disney Plus streaming because my grandchildren like to watch the old Disney movies.
Right. That's what we purchased. We have DVDs of a lot of those.
I don't think I've got a DVD player anymore because everything's done through streaming. Mm-hmm. But I watched Obi-Wan Kenobi. It was a 4-part series.
Have you finished that?
Yeah. I did. Mm-hmm. I watched the end of it last night. It is exceptional. And so, you know, and it's a Star Wars story that sort of connects the dots of what was going on. You know, when the first Star Wars movie starts, we've got Princess Leia, you know, running for her life from the Empire. And then later is it all of this, we find out that Leia and Luke are brother and sister, and we find out that Anakin Skywalker is their father, and there's just all kind of things. So what happened? You know, how did we get to that point? Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi, we find a 10-year-old Leia and a 10-year-old Luke, and what's being done to try to hurt them, and how Obi-Wan Kenobi is their protector during the interim period where they're being raised in these different environments. And so that story unfolds, and, you know, Obi-Wan is kind of a rusty Jedi in the beginning. His Jedi, he's not practicing his Jedi arts, and so he starts out being kind of not a very good Jedi. And then that progresses throughout the movie, and it's just it's the old Anakin versus Obi-Wan is in full view. And there's a moment. There are a couple of moments that
Stop
bring
ruining
clarity.
It for everybody.
I'm not. There are a couple. I'm just saying there are a couple of moments that bring clarity to the rest of the Star Wars story that are helpful. And so anyway, it was really good. But
in order to do that, you've got to support Walt Disney.
I confess that I'm paying a streaming fee in order to get some of the content that I appreciate.
And when Cuties came on Netflix, I didn't have Netflix, and I said, I'm never going to have Netflix, and I have Disney Plus.
Well, Netflix is still the streaming, they're still the streaming giant. I didn't realize this till I was listening to Daily Wire the other day, to the Morning Wire. They've got 127 billion subscribers. No, that's too many. That's too many.
There's only six billion people on the planet.
Thanks. I'm sorry.
They have in the Star Wars universe.
All these other planets, they have 127 million subscribers worldwide.
Okay.
So they're still the leader.
Yeah.
Even though they're losing, but Disney Plus is now second. They have 121 million.
Oh, are you serious? That's not even so to me. That's so comparable. When you get up into the 121 versus 127 million,
that's right.
You're like
they're in the same neighborhood, but Netflix is still the leader technically.
Hmm.
But
we have Amazon Prime. Of course, Amazon is the Antichrist.
And then I don't know where else. You know, well, that's the thing. I mean, it does come down to the question. You know, I had somebody tell me that I should never buy anything from Amazon. I should never drink a Coke product. I should never, you know, once you start to list all of the things that you have to boycott, you can't live in the culture unless you're going to go off the grid.
But you gave people a rubric. You said being LGBTQ friendly is one thing. Being LGBTQ promoting is another thing.
And I'm struggling with that. Hmm. I mean,
we're going to have to struggle. This is Nazi Germany, 1937, 1938. I'm just saying that people struggled with knowing when to say thus far and no farther and draw the line.
Well, as a whole, I mean, I think there are ways to push back and have say where you don't have to boycott the stuff that's good. But I don't know where that is, Austin. I mean, I confess that. I'm conflicted about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to Disneyland when I went to Anaheim,
right?
Because I just didn't want to. I grew up loving all things Disney, particularly Disney World and Disneyland. But there I was. It was right across from my hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, I walk out and there's the entrance.
And
to
a lot
Disneyland.
Of Southern Baptists did
a
go
lot
to
of,
Disneyland.
A lot did. They were and proudly went and didn't mind paying the money to go and take their kids.
And what would Tom Askell say?
That's
going to be my new metric.
That would be
what would Tom Askell say?
Okay, WWTA, yeah. WWTA
sounds too much like the T. What is it?
WWTS. What would Tom say?
It really does sound like the what's the FTC? Not the FTC, the one that does the airport screening. What's the name of that organization?
Oh, the TSA.
TSA, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like
too
TSA.
Much like TSA.
I do have a couple of stories here I want to talk about. This Navy training video that teaches sailors how to use correct pronouns and create safe spaces is just horrible. Okay, it's bad because of its content, but it's also an embarrassment that the Navy has produced something like this that is this quality. I mean, I watched it, and the two people that are having this conversation, They can't even hardly talk to each other. I mean, they're very bad at what they're doing. The production values are bad. So, and maybe we should cheer that considering the content, because the content's bad enough. But they're trying. Here's the United States Navy spending money on a video to train soldiers in how to make sure they don't mispronoun or misgender someone. It has nothing to do with the Navy's job. The Navy's job is a subset of the military's job. And the military's job is to break things and kill people. And everybody gets uncomfortable when I put it that way, and I got that from Rush Limbaugh. I freely admit that he's the first person that I heard say that, but that's exactly right. The military's job is to break things and kill people. And to do it efficiently and better than the enemy that would like to break our things and kill us. And so whether anybody in the Navy can say the right pronoun at the right time is a distraction that takes away from the main job of the Navy, which is break things and kill people on the water. I mean, I'm stunned, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the Chinese and the Russians have got to be celebrating this when they see the United States military engaging in this kind of weakness. This does not create esprit de corps. It does not create any kind of camaraderie or anything within the military that would be advantageous when it comes to winning a war. It's all about using the military as a social petri dish to get these ideas across to the broader society. And they do that to the detriment of our military readiness. And that really concerns me. Ira's on the phone. Ira, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, I want to go back to your, you know, Disney thing for a second.
Okay.
From what I can remember, when you were speaking about it, I don't think you ever told anybody, you know, what to do as far as you're going to go to hell if you go, you're going to do this, that. There was a group of people up in Rochester, I think they're on Daystar now, but they were talking about telebubbies, tell us something, telebubbles. They were,
oh, the Teletubbies, yeah. Teletubbies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was awful. That came from hell and this and that. The other thing. And then one day he starts saying how his grandkid is learning how to count. And he's using these cards of what we're talking about, the teller thing there. And
Teletubbies.
That was okay.
Yeah.
Now it came as a blessing. And that, to me, is a complete 180, opposed to what you were doing, which you never said. You know, if you go to Disney, if you watch a Disney, you know, you lost your spirit. You're different. I mean, that's what I liked about it.
Well, thanks, Ira. I appreciate that. I just, in this particular instance, I just am confessional about my own conflict about it. I mean, I admit that I have a conflict about it. I have a conflict about the NFL because I've watched the NFL for years. It's been one of my sources of just relax and enjoy life. Watch these guys play football. I love the game of football. I love baseball. But there are plenty of reasons that I could say I'm never going to watch another NFL game and I'm never going to watch another Major League Baseball game. And I know people who have made that decision. But, you know, the NFL's getting closer because when you start having transgender cheerleaders, now there's only one team and it's the Carolina Panthers, and I can't stand them anyway. But you're going to put a transgender cheerleader out there on the field? I mean, that's the promotion of something. It's not just simply saying, yeah, that exists, and yeah, we acknowledge that, and yeah, you know, we live in a world where all that's happening. But once you begin to embrace it to the point of we're actually going to have a same-sex cheerleader, I mean, a transgender cheerleader, I mean, it's disgusting, okay?
I think people need to be encouraged by the fact, though, that there is an idea out there for a Princess Bride-themed diner. And in a world of transgender and insanity, this is a really good idea, which gives me hope for the future of the world. Here goes. A Princess Bride-themed restaurant where waiters say, as you wish, after taking your order. None of this will mean anything to you. Okay? I'm only doing this just to needle you and eventually watching Princess Bride. Okay.
Please.
If you finish the Fezzik in an hour, your meal is free. you come in a wheelbarrow. If you come in a wheelbarrow, your meal is 10% off. Your waiter comes up. I know you can. You just smile and nod over there, okay? Because people—that's right. People out there that actually have class and taste in movies are going to enjoy this. Your waiter comes up and says, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. I'll be your server. Prepare to dine." That's really good. Instead of large, you get an item of unusual size. And let's see, on their anniversary, if you go in on your anniversary, you get a recitation of the marriage speech. That's just going to be really good for people.
Okay, great.
I'm glad that I got that in. Because
I'm glad you did. That was important.
All that other heavy stuff, you know, it just needs to be averaged out.
You know, I'm always fascinated by the power of story. You've said to me before, you know, you're such a movie guy, and you guys have been using a lot of precious air and intelligence, berating me because I haven't seen a particular movie. But
I can berate you. That was just a gentle scold, but I can raise it up to berate if you want me to.
Yeah, if you'd like to. We'll do that off air. But you know, when you think about, I connect some dots here between the power of story and the parables that Jesus told. And you begin to see the reason that Jesus spent so much time telling parables, stories that have a purpose, because they stick in your brain. I mean, they form, you know, who we are. You get caught up in these powerful stories, and they're good things when they depict good and evil in the proper light. You know, that's I read a review that I got Denise to read it. It was about Maverick, you know, Top Gun Maverick Top Gun. Anyway, about why at this particular time in our history we needed that movie, as you know, because we used to sort of culturally go to the movies and experience those things and talk about them together. Okay, like when Jaws came out, when Star Wars came out, when the newest Star Wars movie would come, when Batman would come out, enough people would go have that experience that no matter what your other differences were, you applauded and you sort of enjoyed that together.
This is people of all types waiting on the harbor in Boston for the most recent Charles Dickens installation.
Yes. And the guy that was writing the review at Daily Wire said, you know, the theater where he saw a Top Gun, Maverick, what erupted into applause at the end of the movie. And he said that did him
goosebumps.
Yeah, you see, it did him good for that to have that common experience when we are so divided. And see, that's why, again, I'm going somewhere with this. I'm going back.
It's somewhere good, because it's the movie theater being a common thread. We had so many threads that knitted us together as a nation. Now we've color-coded all of them. And they're all red and blue.
And we're knitted together by themes that are good.
Mm-hmm.
At, you know, the protecting the ones you love.
Right.
Excellence. And, you know, one of the things he talked about in that review that I hadn't even thought about, but, you know, the pilots in that movie that pull off this incredible maneuver are diverse, you know, male, female, black, white, different races, all diverse. But they're all in the 1%, not because of their diversity, but because they're the best. And he said that's a message that we all ought to celebrate.
Hmm.
Is that, you know, what is it that makes diversity work? Well, it works when it happens organically, because the best rise to the top, and not because they're pushed up there because of their race. And that was I just felt like that was a great point. And then he even made this point. I thought it was interesting. You know, the victory is not achieved by the most advanced aircraft. In fact, the victory is a throwback to an aircraft that was used, the Tomcat fighter that was used back in the 80s. But it requires two people in order to be successful. And that there's something to be said about that at the end of that movie. When they get out of the cockpit and the two of them have been through this together, it's not the lone hero out there, it's two people working together. And so in going back to Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I'm not going to – I won't tell you enough about the plot so that it will ruin it for you. But they continue in the best Star Wars tradition, that storyline, where there are clear lines between good and evil, and there are relationships and values that are amplified that are good for a society to agree on and embrace as a culture. And so that's why I think that's important.
And I'm going to go negative here, but that's why it's important that you don't show your children morally formative movies that send a bad moral message. And if you choose to, and some people do, you need to talk about it. You need to highlight it. You don't just gloss over that and hope they don't see the gay kiss. Right. You don't ever take your kids to the movie and just hope they don't see stuff.
Yeah, there's an animated series that my grandkids watch, particularly my oldest grandson. He watches because it's about dinosaurs, and he's all in it's Jurassic Park, and it's an animated group of kids that are stranded on Jurassic on the island with the dinosaurs, and it's really well done. I mean, the animation is good, the stories are good, the way the kids interact, and I'm watching this, right? I've probably seen 20 episodes because I watch it with him. That's something we do together, and then we talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the different dinosaurs because that's what he's into. You know, and we're watching it, and thankfully, he was distracted. He was doing something else, but it was on the TV. And this main character, they started talking about their families, two characters. And this girl just very nonchalantly starts talking about her dads, that both of her dads are so-and-so and so-and-so for her in her life. And I almost fell out of my chair because of all the episodes, I've never seen anything in there that was even approaching that. And it wasn't extended. It wasn't, you know, it was a moment, and then they moved on. They didn't belabor, but she definitely said that. And I'm just thinking, you know, if he's watching that by himself and he was paying attention, he's hearing a message that someone can have two dads.
So many of the things, you know, my wife has talked about with just getting one of these bridge workbooks for the kids in between, you know, to kind of keep them fresh over the summer.
Right.
So their skills don't atrophy. And in the math, you know, in math story problems, they're dealing with alternative family things. And these are, you know, high quality in terms of the curriculum. But you have to watch for it everywhere. And I'm just saying, the price of moral sanity is eternal vigilance. You've got to always have your head in the game. You got to read the stuff your kids are reading ahead of them.
You do.
It's super hard.
Yeah.
And our world is not, you've said this before, our world is not getting easier for Christians to live in.
It isn't. Because, and you have to be more aware of the things that are going on, particularly if you're going to try to protect your kids and your grandkids. I mean, for a lot of people I know, they're trying to protect their children.
Right.
My children are trying to protect their children.
Right.
And I'm as a papa, and my wife as a nana, are trying to protect them and make sure they're turning into the kind of people that they should be.
I mean, so whether you cancel your Disney Plus or your Netflix or not, you have to watch everything that your kids watch ahead of them.
Be aware.
And then talk about it.
And that's what I immediately told Amber. I said, Amber, I didn't know, you know, here, this came out of the blue.
You can't just park your kids in front of that.
You can't.
Nope.
And that's why it was a good thing that
I'm sorry
that
about
day.
That.
I am too, because it's sad that we've come to that point.
Right.
All right. Don't forget, early voting is taking place in the runoff elections that are taking place. One is a statewide, the superintendent of education. You can vote today, you can vote tomorrow, or you can vote Tuesday. But whatever you do, be informed and get out there and vote. We'll continue our conversations tomorrow with more Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. Have a great day.